This is Dream Power Radio, the place where your dreams turn into reality. Here is your host, Debbie Spector Weissman.
Hello, 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 and welcome to Dream Power Radio. I'm your host, certified dream life coach, Debbie Spector Weissman. This is the place where we talk about dreams, both daytime and nighttime dreams, and how you can use them to make the internal shift to a life you love and rediscover the truth of who you really are. When's the last time you checked out your social media? Come on, don't cheat. I bet it was earlier today, maybe even right before you started listening to this podcast. And maybe a few of you even have it open right now. Am I right? If we don't watch ourselves, we can become slaves to the online platforms we read. Sure, it's fun to catch up on the doings of our high school and college friends and to check out the latest adorable videos. But there's a dark side to this as well, as all of you probably know. Those photos of vacations we'll never be able to afford. Beautiful bodies we'll never diet hard enough to achieve. Job successes that appear way out of reach. Seeing too much of these can make a slight case of envy turn into esteem issues or even depression. Nobody really wants to go there, but the lure of cyberspace can be addictive if we don't watch ourselves. All of this came to mind as I was thinking about my guest today, author Allie Dousimer. She's had a successful professional career with lots of accomplishments that might make you jealous if you saw them on social media. And yet, like most of those who post shiny images, behind the facade, she's also had her share of loss, sadness, and disappointment. She's written about all this in her new book, It's Okay Not to Be Fabulous Every Day, which includes her thoughts on how to be the best person you could be, no matter what life throws at you. Welcome to Dream Power Radio, Allie.
Thank you so much, Debbie. I'm very pleased to be here.
Allie, you say up front in your book that it's not a typical self-improvement book. So how is it different?
Well, when I first wrote the book, it was about twice as long as it is now. And I just kept cutting and cutting and cutting. Because the reality is that I hate self-improvement books. I hate self-help books. You have 200, 300, 400 pages of how to do X, Y, Z, or, you know, who to follow or what to do or habits to have. And I couldn't always get through the books. And two, I always felt worse after reading them because I'm like, oh my God, I can't even do what's in this step-by-step guide. So clearly I'm a failure. And I just don't think all of that is necessary because each of us is so individual, but there are some core things. And so I just really tried to get to those core things and tried to put it into an easily digestible nugget base format. So the book is, you know, one or two pages and then it's a new chapter and one or two pages and people pick it up. They put it down. I have one friend who uses it as a devotional. She just reads a different section every day when she gets up. And I think what's different about it is one, it's not preachy. Two, it doesn't lay out your roadmap for success. What it does do is get at the heart of so many things that we all experience, which include self-doubt and insecurities. And it takes you on a journey through self-acceptance and understanding and hopefully brings you out to self-love and fulfillment of your dreams.
I have to tell you, it is so true. So many books are hundreds and hundreds of pages and mostly it's fluff. You have to dig down to get to the core of it. And when you do, you find out it's all these things that you have to be, you know, either a magician or some kind of miracle worker to be able to get through it and do it all. So you're right. You do get down to the nitty gritty. So I want to talk about some of these things that you talk about. One of them is that we've all had those times when we feel overwhelmed with tasks and to-do lists. And it's almost like the paralysis of analysis. There's so much things we just end up doing nothing. So what's the best way to tackle items that we have to do without making a mess of everything?
Yeah, that's a great question. And I think it's something that all of us can relate to. And each of us probably has our own way that works. I have found for myself and for people I've talked with, sometimes the easiest thing to do is to tackle the low-hanging fruit. do those simple tasks that you can get out of the way so that you can focus on the significant things that you need to work on, that you just have too much mind clutter or emotional clutter to deal with. Having said that, there are people, and I consider them that the high achievers, the truly type A's, and it's the Mark Twain quote. If you have a frog to eat in the morning, eat it first thing. Or if you have a frog to eat in the day, eat it first thing. And if you have two, eat the bigger one first. And I think there are some people who they've got to tackle the big things and forget about everything else. I don't think any other approach really works. You either get rid of the scatter and the noise and focus on the task, or you ignore the scattering noise and focus on the task. Personally, I can't ignore the scattering noise. I just overwhelmed by everything. And so I tend to just try to eliminate. I remember when I was writing my thesis for my master's, I just couldn't write it. I had data, I had my analyses, I had my sources, blah, blah, blah. Couldn't write it. So I decided to start with the thank yous. And then I decided to put together my bibliography. And then I put together my appendices and so on and so on. And when there was nothing else to do, I wrote the paper.
And that's definitely one way to do it. But to bring up an important point, which is that we are all different. We all do have our best ways of getting to where we want to go. I mean, I had one guest on not too recently who told me that procrastination is a good thing. And I'm thinking, what do you mean procrastination? It's, to me, it was a horrible thing, but she had her reasons for why that was an effective way to deal with things. It gets me now to talking about those things that we might call standards. You know, this is the way you should do it. This is the way you should be. And talk me back how those kinds of things can end up being more self-defeating than self-empowering.
Absolutely. I mean, you've read my book. You know that that is something that I have dealt with and continue to deal with, the expectations of others. You had a guest on not long ago who talked about how you can have all the trappings of success. You can got, you know, this great job and you're making money and you're, everyone thinks you're fabulous on the outside. And yet on the inside, you're unhappy. You're a mess. And that's kind of part of what my book speaks to a little bit, because you can't be fabulous every day. It's just not possible. And you can't let other people dictate your happiness or your goals. And I talk a little bit about how, as hard as it is, sometimes you have to eliminate negative people from your lives, people who bring you down and don't bring you up. And that can be especially hard if you've had a longtime friend or colleague or even a family member. And that doesn't mean you have to say, I never want to see you again. But it does mean you don't spend so much time with them and you don't seek out their advice and you don't rely on them in the same way. Because it's good to get input from people. But in the end, you have to listen to your inner voice, your gut. And you've had people talk about that inner voice. There's something there. Because in the end, only you know what is right for you. And allowing other people to dictate your standard of success is just wrong. It's not okay. I had some professional colleagues who'd be like, oh, stay-at-home moms, what are they doing with their lives? Well, they're raising children, which is the most important job in the entire world. And just because they don't want to go to work and slave at a desk every day doesn't mean that what they're doing is less important. And if it's self-fulfilling, it's got to be the most valuable thing in the world. But at the same time, those same people might be like, how can these people leave their children, you know, to go off into an office? Well, maybe that's where they can do the most good. And maybe they're just not the kind of person who can be with their children 24/7, especially when they're small. That takes a lot of patience. You know, we're all built for different things and we're all wired for different activities and standards. And success, personally, I think, is achieved when you are happy. When you are truly happy and fulfilled, you are successful. And that's my definition of success. And I think it's a good one.
It is a good one. I mean, when most people these days in this society define success as how big your paycheck is, and that's not always the case, especially if you're in a job like that where you're making good money, but you're so stressful and fearful that you're going to lose your job or whatever. You're not as happy as the person who is home raising children, which, by the way, is a job that if it paid money, would pay a lot of money. So it's all very important. But a little bit earlier, you were talking about listening to your inner voice and how important it is. But what if you have conflicting voices? Which one do you listen to? How do you figure out which is right?
Yeah, I think of it as a heart-mind conflict, or maybe a gut-heart conflict, right? Your heart is saying one thing, your gut is saying another, you want to follow both. And I think that's where it helps to talk with people who you really trust. Maybe it's your spouse, or maybe it's your friend since kindergarten, or maybe it's your child or your parent, whoever that trusted advisor is for you, the one person who you know will be honest with you and not say, hey, what do I need to do here? But to say, I'm conflicted whether I should turn left or right. What do you think? Can we talk about it? Like, let's discuss the pros and cons together. I remember when years ago, I was in a job and I made decent money. I was miserable. It was a horrible commute. It was very stressful because I didn't get enough time to spend with my family. I had no social life because I was just working all the time. And I got a job offer out of the blue. And I was like, oh, that's so funny. Whatever. Ignored it. And then over the span of 2 weeks, I had three more job offers. And I was telling this to this woman and she was like, the universe is speaking to you. And I was like, oh, oh my gosh, the universe is speaking to me. So that was an eye opener for me. I was so focused in my little niche and my day-to-day grind and what I was doing. I wasn't able to take a step back, seeing the forest for the trees. And so to get to your point, I went to my husband and I was like, I created this spreadsheet, you know, because I was total type A, right? Created this spreadsheet with the pros and the cons, and I've listed all my jobs and my current job and this job and this job and this job. And I went, well, and he looked at me, he's like, well, don't you hate your current commute? I was like, yes. When I went and I said, I've been offered another job, they, of course, offered me a raise and a promotion, which, you know, if they had valued me, they would have offered it before. And he said, yes, I hate you. And then he said, well, and this other company, didn't you have a negative experience with, you know, with them on a particular incident? I was like, yeah, I did. And then he said, and as far as this one, I mean, you'd be required to work from home. We've got a small home. Where exactly are you going to set up your office? And how are you going to keep the kids out? I was like, oh, that's a good point. He's like, well, I don't understand the question because there's only one left. I was like, right, right. So there was only one choice. I was just so close. And so I think if you're in a situation where you're conflicted, seek outside advice, but in a discussion form, not in a tell me what to do form.
Yeah, and this is a very important distinction because in the end, it has to be the decision that you feel in both your heart and your mind and not that somebody is dictating it to you. Let's say when we are in position where, like in your case, it was a job offer, but somebody else is having a life choice they have to make. What are the types of questions that we should be asking ourselves in order to really figure out what we want?
I think the first and most important question, and sometimes it takes closing your eyes and centering or going for a walk or doing whatever it is where you can find your mind peace, your quiet place, and where you can listen to your inner voice when you can really feel that and ask yourself, what makes you happy? Because I really believe that if you are happy, you will be successful. Because it just works out that way. You know, George Burns was famous for saying when he was like on his 90th birthday, it's like, why are you still working? Why are you still doing comedy? And he was like, because I love it. And if they're going to keep paying me, why wouldn't I keep doing it? Because I would keep doing it if they paid me or not. You know, that's a man who is truly successful and happy. And I think that if you're facing a really tough life choice, and certainly I don't mean to minimize because there are some very tough life choices that people have to make and you have to give them considered thought. The first question really is, what is going to make me happy, genuinely happy, regardless of what anybody else thinks? And if you're still conflicted, then talk, just have a conversation, see where it goes, because you don't know how that conversation is going to go. I certainly, when I asked my husband, didn't know he was going to be like, well, I don't understand the question. I always thought he was going to give me advice. I'm like, well, this pays better and this is this. And no, he didn't do that at all. He just stripped everything down for me. And so I think that you might be surprised or people might be surprised how conversations go if you're open to hearing other people's perspectives, because it's very hard when it's you to get that distance.
Good advice and a great note on which to end this section. We are speaking with Ali Dalsimer about why it's okay not to be fabulous every day. And we'll be right. Hi, it's Debbie. If you like what you're hearing on Dream Power Radio, I've got good news for you. There's more information, more insights, more ways for you to live your dream life on my YouTube channel, The Dream Power Experience. Check out insightful video interviews with some of the leading experts in self-growth and empowerment. Plus, a few videos where I share my own advice on how to break free from whatever's holding you back. So take a look at The Dream Power Experience on YouTube. Go to youtube.com/@TheDreamPowerExperience.
Welcome back to Dream Power Radio with your host, Debbie Spector Weissman.
Yes, welcome back to Dream Power Radio. I'm your host, Debbie Spector Weissman, and we're talking about life issues with Ali Dalsimer. Well, Ali, in my introduction, I was talking about all those fabulous people on social media who post all of these wonderful things about their life. And very often it is a facade. So is it wise to put up a facade of being strong when we're falling apart inside?
That's a really good question. I did that for years, and I think there is some benefit to it, but only in terms of a self-defense with people you don't know. You don't want strangers thinking that you are some sort of weak target. Sadly, there are a lot of not nice people out there. And frankly, it's nobody's business who doesn't know you what the specifics of your struggles may be. Although, you know, especially young people, they put such personal detail out there. It's crazy. So I think there is some benefit to that, but I don't think it's mentally or emotionally healthy to do that, to put forward a facade of everything's fabulous and not have somebody know that you need help. You need a friend. You need to talk to somebody. You have to let your inner circle in on your true state of being. And sometimes that is putting something on Facebook that, you know, with your friends only, not a public comment, that's like, I'm not having a great day, would love some positive energy, and put that out there. That's okay. It's interesting you brought that up, because I have a friend and I had breakfast with her last week, and I commented on these amazing photos she had put up of her travel to Europe. She'd gone to Europe with her kids and her husband. And it was like, wow, this is so amazing. You look like you had such a great time. And she said, yeah, well, those photos hide a lot. And it turns out she's actually considering divorce. She's emotional drained. And it was important that she shared that with me. She put those photos up for some of her friends and more distant family so they could see what she's going on, you know, she's what she's up to and whatever. And that's great. It actually made me feel good, because she did say that she had been rereading my book and it was helping her just to accept her current situation and not feel like she's a failure, because she really has done everything she could. And I put a post up the other day, and it was, if you do your best, there is nothing else you can do. You've done your best. You should feel proud of that. And if it doesn't hit the mark in terms of somebody else's estimation, well, that's on them. Because if you've done your best, you should feel good about that. And there's really genuinely nothing more you can do than your best. So in terms of posting in social media and seeing what other people are up there, it's important to understand that people have many reasons for posting what they do. And also that while it's okay to post those, hey, things are great kind of shots and whatever for public consumption, and it really have to be genuine with those who are close to you, because none of us can survive alone. There's been countless studies. People are social creatures, and we need each other, and we need those social support networks.
Absolutely. And you know, that brings up the subject of communication, because a lot of people find it hard to have those kinds of conversations, even with the close friends, or even something that I struggled with for years, which was asking for help. It was the hardest thing I had to learn, was to ask for help.
Yeah, we were definitely raised that that's a sign of weakness, weren't we? Asking for help is a sign of weakness. Crying is a sign of weakness. Fortunately, young people don't have those same barriers, which is nice for them. For those of us in the not under 20 bracket, we do struggle with that. And I have found that communication is easier when I close my eyes and don't actually have to look at someone. I'm having a conversation with them. I'll say, I just can't look at you right now. And I have to close my eyes and say the words. I don't know why that is, but it works for me. And I think there are strategies that can work. It is very hard to communicate honestly and openly because it makes you vulnerable and you can be hurt. But nothing ventured, nothing gained. You have to put yourself out there, have to risk it. You have to take those emotional risks if you are going to move forward for emotional and psychological healing.
That is so true. And yet something that I think stops a lot of people from doing that or doing other things that in their heart they know they should do, but their monkey mind is stopping them, is fear. We can never eliminate fear. We have fear for a reason, but how do we handle it?
That's a tough question. And I think that if there was a one-size-fits-all answer to that, it wouldn't still be an issue. Everybody has to deal with their fears in their own way because everybody's fears developed uniquely. And finding the courage to move forward, I think it's based on something several of the folks that you have interviewed talked about was you have to really want it. And they talked about that in different contexts. They talked about it in terms of success or achieving goals or whatever it is. But the fact of the matter is, regardless of what you're doing, you have to really want it. And if you really want to face and conquer your fears, if you really want that, you will find a way that works for you. Because what works for me or what works for Debbie doesn't work for Jane or Bob. Because your fears are so personal. They come from personal experiences, they come from tragedies and trauma, and everybody's fingerprint is individual on that. So the bottom line, the core on that, I think you have to really want it. If you want to face your fears, you will find a way to do it.
Very important point. Another thing that often keeps a lot of people stuck is regret. What are your thoughts about regret?
Yeah. So one of my favorite commercials from like years and years ago is a Snickers commercial, and I type the football thing at the end and like, no regrets, or it's a tattoo. That's what it was. It was no regrets, you know, which is just, I thought, so clever, because obviously that person will regret that tattoo. And that's so hard, right? Because regret is based on shoulda, coulda, woulda, right? Shoulda done this, could have done that, would have done this. And shoulda, coulda, wouldas will eat you up. Regrets eat you up. And again, they're very personal. And sometimes the first step to overcoming regrets is to admit personal wrong. Because we don't regret things that we did right. We regret things that we either didn't do or that we did wrong. And self-accountability is hard. It's really hard. No one wants to admit that they really screwed up. But I think that's the first step to dealing with regret. And it's so important to do. There's the saying, sadness and regret are twin thieves that rob us of today's happiness. And I believe that. I believe that wholeheartedly. I have regrets. I'm not going to discuss them, of course, but every day I work on them and understand that they were my actions that led to those results. And I need to embrace that and accept it. And once we get to full acceptance, then those regrets go away. It's a journey. It's a journey.
It certainly is. And I guess regret would fall under the broad category of negative emotions, just like fear you talked about earlier. And you call negative emotions a call for action. In what way?
I believe that if you feel bad in some way, you feel sadness, you feel regret, you feel fear, some negative emotion, then something is not right in your life. And I also say positive emotions are a reward for going the right way. So, you know, I talked about the fact that I deal with my regrets every day. The more that I feel like, you know what, I did that, it's done, I'm moving on. And here's what I can do going forward to ensure that doesn't happen again. And in some cases, to try and make up for mistakes I've made. And I feel good doing that. And therefore, I believe that I'm going the right way. So if you're feeling a negative emotion of some kind, you're feeling fear, you're feeling sad, you're feeling regret, whatever that negative emotion is, it's your brain's way of saying, get your butt in gear fix the problem. If you're doing that 9 to 5 and you're making 100,000, 150, whatever the salaries are today, I don't know, people make millions of dollars. You're making millions of dollars doing whatever you're doing and you hate it every day and every morning you wake up thinking, oh God, just get me through this day. Stop. Change gears. Find something where you can wake up every morning and go, I am so excited to do this today. You know? And I woke up Saturday morning and it was rainy and cloudy and gross. And I had a message from a friend who's like, I don't feel like doing anything today. And I was like, it is rainy and cloudy and gross. And I'm going to sit on my armchair and I'm going to write today. And I wrote for the entire day. It was awesome. And I was excited to do that. That's how I know that I have finally found what I like doing. And if you keep pushing forward, 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 sideways, sometimes a little back, but if you keep moving towards that direction where you are finding yourself increasingly less sad, scared, unhappy, more happy, joyful, satisfied, then you're going in the right direction.
That is for sure. Can anyone really be a success without having self-love?
No, that's a really good point. That's a really good point. And I talked a little bit about that in the journey of the book. I think that's the root of it, right? That's, you have self-doubt, you have unhappiness, you have fear, you have regrets. They all come from feeling inadequate in some way and not loving yourself. And the first step towards truly loving yourself, of course, is just accepting who you are and then hopefully moving forward and forward and forward. But like all life, it's synergistic. It's a feedback loop. It's not like, okay, today I'm going to work on this. Today I'm going to work on being happier. Tomorrow I'm going to work on getting rid of my fear. That's not how life works. That's not how nature works. Human bodies, human brains, human hearts, we're natural beings and everything in nature has a yin and a yang. It has a feedback loop. So it's all a very dynamic process. I talk about sometimes you got to take a step sideways or sometimes you just don't get out of your PJs. No, it's okay. And you have to accept that you are a valuable, worthwhile human being who has everything that you need to succeed in whatever that means for you already inside you. And it's just a matter of finding it and tapping into it and learning to love and appreciate who you are as a person, because everyone truly is capable of that.
What a wonderful way to end this. I just have one final question for you, Allie. How can people find out more about you and your book?
Thank you. Yes. You can go to my website, AllieDalsimer.com, or you can follow me on my socials. I'm on Twitter, Allie Dalsimer, on Insta. I think it's Allie_Dalsimer, maybe AllieDalsimer1. I'm not sure. I still have some congressional social media up that I don't really use too much. And I have a Facebook site as well. So just type in my name and everything should come up. And I would love for people to reach out. There's a contact me site and I'm more than happy to talk with folks. And I love personal engagement.
Well, Allie, thank you so much for being on Dream Power Radio today.
Thank you so much. Oh, and please sign up for my newsletter too. I do a newsletter and I get a free gift when you sign up. So yes, please sign up for that too.
Wonderful. Yeah.
Thank you so much, Debbie. I really appreciate the opportunity.
We've been speaking about how to deal with our daily struggles with Allie Dalsimer. I hope you've enjoyed today's program. If so, please hit that subscribe button so you don't miss out on any future episodes. Till next time, this is Debbie Spector Weisman saying, sweet dreams, everybody.
You've been listening to Dream Power Radio with your host, Debbie Spector Weisman. For more information on Debbie or to sign up for her newsletter, go to dreampowerradio.com. This has been Dream Power Radio.